The opinions expressed on the following program do not necessarily reflect the views of KTXT, its management, Texas Tech University, or any living person. This is the Devil's Advocate.
Please allow me to introduce myself.
You know, that open always reminds me of that really cool Mercedes-Benz commercial. Hey, this is Dr. K coming to you live from the College of Media and Communication at Texas Tech University, KTXT, the Raider 88.1. We're here for the Devil's Advocate. Welcome back. If you're a regular listener, we really appreciate you guys. Thanks. So joining us from political science, Anna Leavis on the right and Matthew Riley offshore. I'm not quite sure where to place you.
On the border.
Exactly. On the border. Reggie Rutledge is back with us, of course.
Hey,
Paul
guys,
Williamson. Paul Williamson's joining us. And I forgot to introduce Jordan Lejeune last time because he's hiding behind this wall. So this time he leaned around the window so I could see him for sure. So
the last thing I'm worried about is people not knowing I'm on the show.
Yeah, one of the things he loves about the radio is nobody listens. So let's see if we can change
and
that.
And they can't see his face.
Well, so I can say whatever outrageous things I want.
Exactly. So who's heard of Terry McAuliffe? You guys probably hadn't before this election, but I'm old. He was an old Clinton hand, served for years in the Clinton administration in the 90s, ran for governor of Virginia and won. And we're still talking about this election 8 days later because there's a lot of fallout from this election. It's a really interesting one. We're gonna talk about some big issues regarding Chris Christie and Obamacare. Did you see how I did that? See what?
Oh, you're so clever, okay, Dr.
So,
K.
So anyway, Terry McAuliffe had double-digit leads for the entire race as governor of Virginia in this election that happened last Tuesday, and yet on the night of the election, the margin was less than 40,000 votes. Ken Cuccinelli, who's a Tea Party Republican, barely lost this race. It was less than 2%. What makes it interesting is McAuliffe outspent Cuccinelli 3-1, spent $15 million more on ads than Cuccinelli, and it's because Cuccinelli couldn't get any support from the Republican Party. They all said, you're going to lose that race. You're hopeless. We're not going to devote any resources. He got no help from the Republican Governor's Fund, got no help from the Chamber of Commerce. They sort of left him hanging, and then everybody was shocked that they had so easily given up on a governor's race. And think about this again. Terry McAuliffe outspent Cuccinelli 3-1 and yet won by less than 2%. I mean, that race was Cuccinelli's for the taking if he had just gotten some support outside. I'm just curious what you guys think, what it means for the Tea Party, what it means for the GOP.
I bet he's sitting there right now. For the first time ever, I'd agree with this sentiment. He's sitting there right now and saying, I wish I'd thrown more money at the problem, like a good Republican.
Yeah, except it wasn't him. It's the party he's met. He's furious, and a bunch of his handlers are furious because they feel like this is a race they could have won.
I do think it's really indicative, though, of what's going on with our country right now in the Republican Party. Because if you're a Republican, you kind of have to make the decision. Am I going to be the moderate, or am I going to go to the Tea Party side? And, I mean, fortunately, we see how this conflict played out. And you're not going to win an election if you're not getting donor money, and that's what happened.
Yeah, and the Republicans are pretty much showing that they're not going to fully support the Tea Party because, I mean, the numbers are just there. A Gallup poll shows only 22% of Americans say their support of the Tea Party movement. The numbers are way against the Tea Party nationwide. This is a smart political strategy for the Republicans to get away from the Tea Party supporters, especially after the how polls show how Americans blame the Tea Party Congress for the government shutdown.
Our own Senator Ted Cruz from right here in Texas.
God, what a worthless piece of crap he is. But yeah, and this is great because the Democrats will just keep easily winning elections.
In New Jersey?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, because New Jersey is such a Republican stronghold.
But hey, our new Senator Cory Booker from New Jersey.
Christie won that by being moderate, by saying, "Hey, I can go across the aisle," because he buddied up with Obama during the Sandy, during Sandy. So
something he got crucified for by the Tea Party.
Yeah, exactly. And yet he still won. So it proves you don't need the Tea Party, and the Tea Party hurts you. So it's a good political move for the GOP to separate themselves from the Tea Party.
Well, I'm a little surprised that there's 22% support for the Tea Party. I actually thought it'd be lower than that. That's actually not bad at all, considering that they've basically been marginalized by the mainstream and yet still enjoy tremendous support in certain sectors of the country, including here in West Texas.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, the West Texas support, that's really what you want.
Mm. Well, that's where Ted Cruz came from. And listen, Ted Cruz, all politics are local, and Ted Cruz is governing for Texans, and he's still wildly popular in the state.
Yeah, he's governing for Texans as he jets across the country to gain money for his presidential run.
Yeah, but that's the game you have to play. And remember, Terry McAuliffe spent $34 million just for the governor's race in Virginia. That's
well,
just
that's why
the
I'm also in favor of total public financing of elections.
You're
with
for
small
public
caps.
Financing of everything, you yeah. socialist. That's
absolutely.
Your problem.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay, well, I returned the Communist Manifesto for this week, so I'm back on the right side of things.
So your IQ dropped about 15 points, right?
Exactly right.
It's back to where it normally is.
Yeah, it's back in that 22% Tea Party range. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Double-digit support for the Tea Party,
exactly.
Double-digit IQ.
Right. You're one of those people who somehow believes Obama can be a communist and a Nazi, as if those two things aren't complete opposites of each other.
So it's interesting because there are some people arguing just this point, that Chris Christie won in New Jersey because he's not a Tea Partier, and that Ken Cuccinelli lost in Virginia because he is. But there's substantial evidence that Ken Cuccinelli could well have done better with a little more support despite his Tea Party leanings, because none of the polls before the election showed him getting anywhere near this close. And by the way, Ken Cuccinelli won handily with undecideds. He did very well with moderates, had a big lead with moderates, took almost half the Hispanic vote in the state of Virginia. A lot of young voters voted for him. I mean, there's a lot of appeal considering he's a fairly religious Tea Party conservative. So I don't think the Tea Party's quite dead, at least in Virginia or Texas, some parts of the country. That's what I think is curious.
Well, I think what also kept it close was the fact that he overwhelmingly won the white vote, because white people suck, and they will not vote for Democrats for whatever reason.
Yeah, none of them voted for Barack Obama in 2008. I'm sure that's...
not very many, trust me.
No, a whole lots did, but nice try. The other issue that played a big factor here is Ken Cuccinelli ran vociferously against the Affordable Care Act, against Obamacare. And people think he got a lot of traction in the last few weeks from that because of the difficulties with the website and implementing yeah. Obamacare. And I think that was a factor.
Yeah, I think this sets up a really interesting 2014 election, because the Democrats are split on the on Obamacare's like liftoff, how bad it's been, and Democrats are really angry about that. And then you got the Republicans are split by the Tea Party. So you got two parties that are not necessarily united going into these elections, and it's going to be really interesting to see how it plays out.
Well, I don't know if it'd be particularly interesting, because it all comes down to who the Democrats and who the Republicans end up choosing for their candidates. I mean, from what it looks like, it seems like the lineup for Democratic candidates is, let me think, oh yeah, Hillary Clinton and who else? So
not if I can stop it.
Well, and clearly it's hers, just like it was in 2008, and there's no question, and it's over.
Well, we can have another black man try. I mean, it'll always try and win the vote. But, I mean, Republicans, you have several candidates who've come up and want to go for their candidacy. So it all comes down to, I suppose.
Including a couple we've mentioned.
Uh-huh, exactly.
Ted Cruz, Chris Christie.
Exactly. So it all comes down to, really, who the candidates will be in this election. But I think that was a very interesting point.
Yeah. Well, so we'll see. So anyway, Obamacare was an issue. Tea Party was an issue. Let's do this. Let's listen to Jasmine Moore, who's keeping us airborne behind the glass over here. She did another epic montage that we're really excited to hear. So let's give a listen to that and add a little entertainment value. Clearly, what's missing from our discussion.
Of course. There's no excuse for it, and I take full responsibility for making sure it gets fixed ASAP.
Let me say directly to these Americans, you deserve better. I apologize.
A new report, just 6 people enrolled on day one, and the president broke this promise.
If you like your doctor, you can keep your doctor. If you like your health care plan, you can keep your health care plan.
But is the initial debacle a sign of things to come? Today, a debate over how Obamacare will affect you.
We saw, first of all, millions upon millions of Americans rise up all over this country, over 2 million people signing a national petition to defund Obamacare. We saw the House of Representatives take a courageous stand, listening to the American people that everyone in official Washington just weeks earlier said would never happen. That was a remarkable victory, to see the House engage in a profile in courage. Unfortunately, the Senate chose not to follow the House. And in particular, we saw real division among Senate Republicans. That was unfortunate. I would point out that had Senate Republicans united and supported House Republicans, the outcome of this, I believe, would have been very, very different.
Well, this is part of the problem with the Virginia result, is that there's no real way to know what happened. And if you think about the spending disparity that Paul talked about, you think about the shutdown having its effect. But also, there's no question that at the end, this Obamacare issue became central. And so for a lot of people who are on the right, who believe that it's a winning issue to continue to fight Obamacare, they look at the Cuccinelli result and they think it actually gives ballast to their argument. It is an issue that is, unfortunately, and this is one of the things we read about in the book as well, Governor Romney could never really litigate the issue fully in 2012. So because of Romney Care, he was kind of boxed in. And we never really got, the president can't really claim the kind of mandate. If Rick Perry had been the Republican nominee, or Newt Gingrich had been the Republican nominee, Obamacare would have been front and center. And if the president had won, he could have stood up and said, I won, I have a mandate now for Obamacare. That didn't happen. A lot of people on the Tea Party wing of the Republican Party feel like it wasn't really litigated in 2012. And now all the things that have happened with the problems with the website, the problems with the rollout, the apparent misstatements by the president have only fueled the fire more to keep fighting this fight. And there's no political clarity about whether it's a winner or a loser for Republicans, which is why it's not, the results from Tuesday are not a clear victory for establishment Republicans. Tea Party people feel emboldened and not dampened down.
We said this race was a referendum on Obamacare, and although I lost, tonight you sent a message to the President of the United States that you believe that Virginia understands that Obamacare is a failure and that you want to be in charge of your health care and not the government. Despite being outspent by an unprecedented $15 million, this race came down to the wire because of Obamacare.
I regret very much that what we intended to do, which is to make sure that everybody is moving into better plans because they want them as opposed to because they're forced into it, that you know, we weren't as clear as we needed to be in terms of the changes that were taking place. And I want to do everything we can to make sure that people are finding themselves in a good position, a better position than they were before this law happened. And I am sorry that they, you know, are finding themselves in this situation based on assurances they got from me. We've got to work hard to make sure that they know we hear them and that we're going to do everything we can to deal with folks who find themselves in a tough position as a consequence of this.
Let me stand up and bend over to get in a good position for Obamacare. So some interesting things have come out since the president apologized, which was interesting. If you can, you know, one of the big hallmarks was if you like your plan, you can keep it. Anybody have a clue how many people, we'll get more into Obamacare in a minute, but how many, well, you know, let me sit on this. It's a good tease. We're going to tell you how many people the president knew would lose their health care plan way back in 2010, and it's not the six people who signed up for Obamacare on the first day. So I thought that was pretty remarkable. Jasmine, really nice job, as always. Those are fun. Enjoy them. So you heard in there that the Tea Party actually is not dead, that a lot of folks view the Cuccinelli just narrowest of misses as real support for the Tea Party.
Sorry, Mr. Cuccinelli. Close only counts in horseshoes and hand grenades.
And nuclear
and
war.
So by his own admission, if the election was made about Obamacare, he lost. It doesn't matter how many votes he lost by, he lost, which means the state of Virginia actually approves of Obamacare.
Well, maybe Terry McAuliffe bought a vote or two with his $34 million.
Threw more money at it, clearly.
Oh, yes, because Republicans don't know a thing about huge lobbying groups. The Koch brothers, maybe? Oh, maybe.
Yeah, we don't know anything about spending money on the GOP side. Exactly right. I don't know. I think what we're going to see is we're going to continue to see, I think, a national fracturing by ideology. So we're going to see people like Mike Lee in Utah, Ted Cruz in Texas continue to be very, very popular in their home states, whether they can translate it to national support or ever get a Tea Party foothold in places like Northern California, New Jersey, Massachusetts. I just don't see that happening. But I do think that it's going to be an entrenched issue. And I like where I think it was Matthew earlier going, saying we're going to have sort of divided parties. You know, I think we're going to have some tension among red state Democrats who really have a big issue to run against. Maybe it was Paul coming up in the midterm.
It was Paul. I got to give credit where credit's
due. Okay, I appreciate it. But yeah, I think in the midterms it's going to be a big issue because a lot of red state Democrats are already running from this thing, and they're appealing. They're supporting delays of implementation, some changes.
What the Tea Party needs is structure. It's such an amorphous movement. It's kind of like a blob of things, and people kind of call themselves Tea Parties and move on.
Like the Occupy movement?
Yeah, exactly. Structure. I mean, there's no structure. There's no like head person to look to. So people just claim the term Tea Party. If anybody's claiming the term Tea Party, even the most unpopular people claim the Tea Party label, which kills the movement. So politically, I think the Tea Party just needs some form of structure. And without that structure, they're going to die.
Well, the difference though with Occupy is the fact that Occupy didn't have a nut job in the Senate taking the government hostage for 2 weeks because he's a sore loser.
No, they had a lot of nut jobs, just no bosses.
They had a lot of nut jobs, but thankfully they weren't in the government.
Now they have credit cards.
Oh, that's right. Scandalous. All right, speaking of head person, we're going to take a little break, but when we come back, we'll tell you about Anna Lavis's hunting trip with Dick Cheney. So that's coming up on The Devil's Advocate. Stay with us. We'll see you in a couple minutes.
Children.
I love the classics. Just love that old music. Fantastic. Of course, I'm what, old, right? Okay, so anyway, yeah, it's
I
funny.
I don't consider 80s classic, so even I guess I'm older than you on that one.
Could be. It's funny because we were arguing, Matthew is keeping his head down. He's going to talk in a little while about Iran, and we were thinking, I could tell from the look on his face, he was worried. We fight more vociferously over things like abortion and the Commerce Clause than we do
against our actual enemies.
Exactly. Yeah, it was pretty comical, so it was interesting. So let's talk about Obamacare. Have any of you signed up? Have you all signed up, all of you?
No, thankfully I can still stay on my parents' plan.
Until you're like, what, 49? No, it's 26.
Hey, if my parents are willing to pay for it.
26 years, and that's the right attitude.
The clock is counting on me. I got to February 21st to figure it out.
This
is 26.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Oh, gosh, is that your 26th birthday?
It sure is.
Okay, yeah, so yeah, you better start looking. Paul, we need you to enroll in Obamacare.
Well, I was so fortunate, you know, after my hunting trip with Dick Cheney, I was so blessed that I still had my insurance, so I was able to get
Anna,
that.
Anna, let me
your
ask
workplace,
you.
Your workplace, your student insurance?
Yeah, my, yeah.
Anna, let me ask you this. Did he force you to apologize after him shooting you?
No, I just automatically dropped to my knees and said, I'm so sorry for getting in your way. Because he had a great shot, though.
Yeah. It's like, good job. Great shot, Cheney.
So this didn't involve Dick Cheney, but it did involve Anna and a rifle. So it's kind of fun. But I have to be political correct here. She sells a 3-stitch scar on her forehead better than most people. I'll just put it that way.
And you know I love being the elephant in the room, so.
Well, we're going to talk about that later. And you and Chris Christie have very little in common other than Republican ideologues. So that's, we'll show that. But yeah, so you want to tell us why there's a little scar in the shape of a lightning bolt on your forehead?
I was trying to be a real Texan woman and, you know, go shoot some guns, right?
So America.
I had this awesome rifle and the scope was loose. How could I have known this? You know, I didn't check and I shot the gun. Came back and hit me in the head, and I was in a hysteria of laughter until I realized, cut my head open a little bit.
Yeah, there's blood dripping off my nose.
That's why we need gun control.
Yeah, so.
Well, my scope was loose. How was I to know?
If you hit the target.
No, of course not.
If you hit the target, then that was reasonable gun control.
I mean, it was a bullseye. It's on my refrigerator. It is awesome.
Then that's gun control right there.
Wait, so you shot this gun in your house at the fridge?
What was this about to say?
No. I took the target home. As a trophy.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
I was about to say, that's some short-range target practice.
She did run a tap through the hole in the refrigerator door, and so now it's easy to get the cold beer.
Very true.
Okay, so actually 6 people enrolled, we know, the first day on Obamacare. There are now just less than 50,000 signed up, supposedly. And that compares favorably, no it doesn't, to the Medicaid enrollment numbers.
Hey, you can say that Obamacare has gone up 1,000% at least. That's something.
Well, exactly. Yeah, it's gone up tremendously from the 6 on the first day. There are still big problems with it. And the issue is it's not just the website. So like I say, 500,000 people have enrolled in Medicaid, partly because it's an easier option. And so they're bailing on the complexity of Obamacare going into Medicaid, which is an option. Paul, you may want to look into that option. The other thing is I need all of you to sign up because I'm old and female, feeble. I'm old and feeble. And
breaking news here at KTXT.
I need you all to pay for that sex change operation that I'm clearly thinking about.
The name Kelly makes sound so better.
It fits better, doesn't it? Yeah, see where I'm going? Anyway, the point is when I need all this expensive health care shortly, I'm going to need all of you enrolled to pay for it. And you guys and your peers are just not signing up, so that's a problem.
So, but what's the difference? We either sign up for Obamacare or we pay for it that, or you get kicked off your insurance and you go to the emergency room and we pick up your bill when you can't pay for it. So what's the difference?
You don't, Jordan, taxpayers do. But okay, what do you want, Paul?
I think we should just have the government pay for everything.
There you go.
Thank you.
It's
that simple. I think that would solve all these problems.
Because,
actually,
Anna, the government has its own pool of money, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah.
Well, yeah.
Why are we the only, you know, civilized nation in the world that doesn't have some form of national health care?
Because the rest have defaulted.
Well, it's America.
Because the rest of the world needs the capitalism in the U.S. to have an innovative medical system to provide them with all the health care that's saving all
and
these
Dr.
lives.
And Dr. K just told us about how lovely that situation was in which he got stitches and how great that felt when they ran out of anesthesia.
3 stitches in my lip in a living room in Spain with no anesthesia. So
every European I've talked to has absolutely rave reviews about their national national health care system and can't believe that this is even a debate here.
But there are a couple different issues. One is a level of, and actually they're having tremendous issues now because there's such unemployment. There aren't enough people paying taxes to pay for the health care. So that's the problem. You know, folks get in the bad habit. Of course, you guys aren't like this, but you'll often see people on the news say the government should provide it. Is this the government just has money and money comes from my pocket?
Well, if did my, you know, I don't think we have enough time to get into my healthcare plan that I've thought in my head. You know, defund a lot of military, give it to healthcare and education is what I would do. But I think that would create a lot of money. But I guess to get back on the point here, I guess Obamacare, it's not getting off to a good start. Not very many people are signing up, and that's a problem for Democrats going up into the election coming up.
Well, and one of the problems is a lot of people want to say, well, it's the website. It's just the website. And the president has talked about just the website, but that is far from the only issue. In fact, one of the big scandals is you see a lot of people on private health care plans who are losing their insurance, but it's not just private health care plans. A lot of employers are shifting people to part-time. There were 180,000 lost their coverage. Elderly folks, mostly in California, lost their coverage and were encouraged to shift over to the Affordable Care Act. It was actually 300,000, if I'm not mistaken, in Florida, mostly elderly, who lost their coverage and are being shifted. The problem is a lot of them cannot go in places like Florida into Medicaid or Medicare because so many physicians are not taking new Medicaid or Medicare patients because the reimbursements are so slow. And that was an artificial cap put in place by the president. The biggest scandal of all is that, and I love this, the president comes out and says, well, it's only, what's the number? Only 6% or six, no, it's only 16% of Americans have one of those private health plans, so we don't care. And that was scandalous because only 17% of Americans didn't have health insurance before. So the ones who were able to afford a private plan, he's throwing them under the bus in favor of those who couldn't afford it. And he knew.
Well, we also have to mention that normal years before Obamacare, there was a 14% turnover in the private insurance market. So how big of a difference are we really talking?
Well, the issue is he knew in 2010, and this is the biggest scandal, as many as 93 million Americans, which is a third of the population, could expect to lose their insurance plans that they have now in some fashion because their employer will drop it because it doesn't fit with the new rules for Obamacare, which include special funding for
abortion. Well, wait a minute. Let's correct something there, though. The reason, and I will agree 100% that the president did a horrible job of selling this to the American people, because when the Affordable Care Act was passed, what it said was that any plans before 2010, even if they didn't meet the new requirements, would be grandfathered in, but only if there were no changes made to them after 2010. So anybody with a little bit of common sense could have seen that, of course, insurance companies were going to change these policies because most of them were cheap, inexpensive policies that didn't cover much. Of course, the insurance companies were going to change them in the hopes that they could simply sell their customers more expensive policies. You know, it doesn't take a genius to see that was going to happen.
Close,
and
but
that's
not
what
quite.
That's what has been happening.
Well, the reason they changed is because Obamacare requires minimum standards for insurance. The reason that bothers me is Paul is young and healthy and would probably like a really affordable catastrophic plan. I don't want to put words in your mouth, Paul, over a really expensive bronze, silver, gold, or platinum plan. And those plans are the ones that are going away. The insurance companies had no choice under Obamacare rules, but
actually, yes, they did.
That was a trapdoor built in.
Once again, as always, you're hearing what you want to hear and not what's actually being said.
Oh, for crying
out
loud.
If there was a plan in place before January 2010, it could be kept exactly the
same.
Unless it changed. So it's the insurance companies. Why did they change these plans? Oh, they changed them so that they could kick the people off of them, and that way they could try to sell them more expensive plans.
Okay.
Of course. And of course, that's a flaw in the system. Undoubtedly, that is a flaw in the Obamacare system. I just wish the president would have done a better job of explaining that to the American people.
Well,
you know, instead of simply saying you can keep your plan if you like, that was not genuine. He should have explained, look, you can keep your plan as long as the insurance companies don't change them.
Well,
and that way that would have put the blame where it goes for most of it on this, which is the insurance
companies.
But
here's why that's moot. That applies to the private insurance plans from before 2010. The rule shows that as many as 51% of employer-based health plans are going to go away and get kicked out. and people are going to be left without that coverage. And so he never even, forget about how he sold it, he was essentially lying about what the impact was going to be on Obamacare. Anybody else have an opinion on this?
Yeah.
I'm happy to yell at Jordan all day, but I just thought I'd give somebody else a chance.
You want to?
Well, I have said this every single time we've talked about Obamacare. I think it is just such an unfortunate situation that my generation, the millennials, when it's already super hard to get a job at this point, have to take care of the older generation when we don't, we have to pay more for our premiums to cover for those elders who we love and respect.
But not enough to keep alive and healthy.
Apparently. Yeah, but now we
not
have,
much apparently.
They're not the healthiest cats, you know, out there. So we're gonna have to pay for their.
Well, and the next generation is gonna have to pay for us. That's how mankind and humanity works.
Right, and Obamacare and the law sets out caps on how much of a percent of your income you can spend. So it creates some kind of cost control, which there was none. So while technically, yes, we are paying for other people, that's kind of how society has to work. You have to pay for other people because that's just how society has to work.
And you know how we could have avoided this entire problem if we had just created a public option? If we had created a public option that people could have either stayed in the private market or they could have bought into the public option, this entire problem would not exist. But oh wait, the Republicans didn't let us have that now, did they?
Well, some people have tried to stay in the private market and they've been kicked off. That's the issue.
Exactly. But if you had created a public option, that wouldn't happen.
Well, so a couple thoughts on that. One, I think the end game is to get to a single-payer public insurance plan. I do think that's the president's end game goal, and it'll be interesting to see if he can get there. And he made a comment directly to union supporters back in 2008 that was his goal. He openly advocated for single-payer nationalized health care, but said we have to do it in steps to get there, which is kind of interesting because I think that cat's out of the bag. The other issue is there was a push to get more states to enroll in expanded Medicaid, and some states did enrolled, 2014, 36 did not. They rejected the expanded Medicaid. And I think that's interesting because the reason a majority of states opposed it, and including Governor Perry right here in Texas, was that the federal government was coming in and saying, we're going to give you a lot more federal money to expand your Medicaid system. Okay, A, sounds great on paper up front, until B, you realize, well, it's federal taxpayer dollars or state taxpayer dollars. Either way, it's coming out of my pocket. So there's already a problem because there is no government money. The other issue was in the first years, the government paid 90% of the fees. Then it fell to 80%. Then it fell to 70%. And over time, and Governor Perry and other smart governors, almost all Republicans, saw that this was going to be a hook, a pariah hung around their neck that was going to sink them in coming years. And I think we're going to see that too with this tremendous increase in Medicaid enrollments.
Well, I thought it would never be more than 10%. At least this is what this Atlantic article says. It would never be more than 10%.
19,000 Texans a year will die because of no Medicaid expansion.
What's
so,
your source
yes,
for that? You
money,
keep saying that number, and I keep.
I will find it for you right now.
Okay, let's go take a look because I'm a little shocked. But
sure,
anyway. To the smartphone. I'm always skeptical of that.
And, you know, I would be with Perry if it did go down to like 70 or 60% of federal dollars for Medicaid in the future. But according to this, was it the Atlantic, I think it was, said it was no more than 10%. So I think that this is a pretty good deal for states. You have 3 years, and then after those 3 years, you would not pay for more than 10% of your Medicaid, which I think is a pretty good deal for states.
Well, I suppose, except the money still flows out of taxpayers' pockets through the federal bureaucracy, into the state bureaucracy, and finally into healthcare, which is a ridiculously inefficient way to handle it. And then Jordan mentioned a week or two ago and was berating the co-host that week, who we have sympathy for this week because, you know, she's been shot in the head by Dick Cheney. But anyway, it was one of the arguments was the Republicans don't have a plan, and that Republicans have had a plan going back several years, and Paul Ryan was a big advocate of this, which was simply drop state barriers on insurance and let private insurers sell across state lines, which without a penny of cost to state or federal governments would have tremendously increased competition, and we'd have had lots and lots of selections, and not limited to four plans, bronze, silver, gold, or platinum, but a wide range of plans from very cheap, catastrophic only, up to platinum and beyond Cadillac plans.
Which, of course, indirectly, though, does give the government control over health insurance because, as the Constitution says, Congress has control over interstate commerce. Just going to throw that out there.
Yeah, which means they would have bigfooted in as the federal government in the first place. Anyway, let's take a break, and we're going to go to something less contentious, which is the global nuclear threat from Iran. So we'll come talk about that in a couple of minutes on The Devil's Advocate.
Nukes.
Iran, France.
Oh,
Matthew, go!
Dr. K, you just have to say the things that get me excited. All right, so...
Oh, dear, we don't want to know that.
Careful now.
This is public radio, man.
International radio. I mean, it's what I do.
I was laughing because Lemuel Chung was by the door being cautious about who he let in. I'm like, you're concerned about letting riffraff into the radio station after we're all already in here?
Careful.
Hello, McFly.
Careful, don't let any IDF supporters
just don't
in
let the...
I may just be in some deep trouble. So anyway, speaking about peace in the Middle East, apparently that has come... I've been getting multiple sources recently with Iran opening up to the international community, trying to get a deal on their nuclear program.
It's a scam. It's Rouhani playing the game.
Well, we'll see. We'll see. Because apparently it's interesting because even... Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov actually commented that the United States has actually been rather cooperative, but on the Iranian side, they say they are not cooperative. And get this, apparently the main person who opposes this has been France on the deals that have been struck with Iran's nuclear program. But apparently recently, the the major consensus that have been made by the UN is that UN inspectors will now be allowed to examine Iranian nuclear facilities. So that's good. That's a good first step. But as to whether this will actually amount to anything else, I'll leave that up to my good friend, President Benjamin Netanyahu's good hands.
Your best friend. So it's fascinating because, and I love the way the Wall Street Journal led an article with this. We never thought we'd say this, but thank heaven for French foreign policy exceptionalism. I just think the irony of France leading the way in tough, hard-nosed negotiations when they're the famous roll on your back and play dead, which is terrible. The greater irony is there's a socialist leader, Francois Hollande, openly socialist leader in France, taxing millionaires. A lot of soccer players are leaving France and abandoning, trying to go to other leagues so they don't have to pay these ridiculous taxes.
Well, also and, because the French league sucks.
Well, okay, but it's fascinating because, yeah, we'll go off on a tangent on soccer and that'll be the end of the show. But it's just fascinating to me that just the French, for a number of ironic reasons, especially with a socialist leader, would take this hardline stand. And all I can ask is, what the heck?
Well, let me try and give some insight on this. Actually, myself, I was confused when I first heard this. I was originally very skeptical. I could not believe that France took a hard line, especially considering when we originally wanted to go into Iraq under George W. Bush, the French were the first ones to openly oppose us. But now that we want to negotiate some type of peace in the Middle East, the French are openly against us. So I don't understand the notion. But what I read in one article is that it's now take this with a grain of salt because it is from the Russian Times, that it's believed that they're doing this due to their political relations with Saudi Arabia, who is very much against this idea of being more lenient on Iran's nuclear program. So apparently what France wanted to do, which Iran was very much against, was was not allowing them to even produce the 20% radiated uranium, which is used for practical uses and stuff like that. It only turns nuclear when it's 90% irradiated. So apparently they took that very hard line on that, which apparently sort of stopped the deal in its midst. And with negotiations are going to continue in December, but this is really so slowed down negotiations.
Okay, just for like my clarification here, what are the specific things that France wants in the deal, doesn't want in the deal? As opposed to the Americans, to what Kerry is supporting.
Okay, excellent question. The difference is the United States, what they've specifically wanted and they've lobbied for constantly is just UN inspectors in these facilities trying to check out that their irradiated uranium is not above the crucial level. France, however, does not even want the 20% irradiated uranium for fear that it could be easily turned into 90%, which can be used for a nuclear weapon. So France taking a much harder line on this than the United States. That's the main differentiation, which is very interesting.
That is really interesting because you would think that they would be on our side, or we would be on their side, actually. I think that we would want to take a more hardline stance on that. Wouldn't you think? Like, that doesn't make any much intuitive sense to me.
Yeah, well, I think Matthew has some 20% in his backpack right now. One of the other issues...
According to the Israelis, maybe.
With the plane ticket to Libya.
The other issue is the deal so far, whether the deal was progressing, was a six-month cooling-off period for Iran in which we would sort of increasingly look into their nuclear program in exchange for immediately dropping all the sanctions. And that's just absurd because it's a lot harder to reinstitute the sanctions.
Absolutely. Now, look, I will be the first person to disagree with President Netanyahu, but to a certain degree, to a very small certain degree...
Wait, pay close attention to this. This is
to a very, very small certain degree, I agree with his notion that we should be cautious with Iran. I mean, I feel that the president has lowered sanctions far too quickly for far too little gain. I mean, basically all Hassan Rouhani did was he said, we want to talk. And President Obama immediately was like, let's lower the sanctions just right now. But
starting in June, actually, he already reduced some of the sanctions,
exactly.
Especially critical, the sanctions that targeted businesses that do business with Iran. The blacklisting stopped. Any punishment against those companies has stopped. That was done unilaterally by the president 5 months ago.
Yeah, well, what I think that Obama is doing, and we talked about this earlier during the break, is I think he wants to show that he did everything possible if some type of military action has to happen. I think he wants to be able to sell that in the future by saying, look, I redo sanctions. I conceded things to Iran. They still didn't bite. Now the only thing possible to left if you don't want nukes in Iran is to strike them. So I think that is just setting up the stage for a military future, I guess the way you can
I suppose the reason that troubles me is it's basically plowing the road for them to go ahead and proceed toward that future.
So that's problematic. I certainly hope that I am not correct on this, but it seems like Israel and Netanyahu is just getting really antsy. They want something done in Iran now. If no deal happens, I think that it's inevitable that Israel is going to want to strike, and the United States is going to have no choice but to support Israel on that. And so Obama and the Democrats are going to need to sell that to the American people.
Oh, we'll have plenty of choice.
Well, or at least a duck and cover.
One other thing,
Paul, I love the way you phrase that, specifically the no choice part, because as soon as Israel strikes, for some god awful reason, we have to support them.
Because
apparently they are our ally, which, by the way, Israel has never officially, and most of our viewers may not know, is Israel has never officially acknowledged the United States as an ally, just as a moral supporter.
Got to keep us on the hook so that Democrats can get more votes in New York. That's how it works. It makes a little sense, not that it's France necessarily, especially under socialist Hollande, which makes no sense at all, but it makes a lot of sense that Saudi Arabia, Sunni Saudi Arabia, is highly suspicious of Shia Iran, especially in their proximity. And Saudi Arabia's under some tremendous pressure because of the success of fracking in this country, which was an irony nobody saw coming. The U.S. could become an oil exporting country by 2017. That's just 3 years away.
Can we even part of OPEC now?
That.
Well, it's possible. Yeah, maybe the U.S. could join OPEC. That would be interesting. But yet, really fascinating how it's turning some countries that have used oil to turn the screws on the U.S., including Saudi Arabia, on their ears, and it's fascinating to watch.
No, especially because we may actually be up with the big wigs now in OPEC. Like Paul said, we may be having discussions with Maduro from Venezuela, the Saudi Arabians, the Arabians. Hell, I mean, we may just go up and be a big oil-producing nation. But you brought up an excellent point, especially with Saudi Arabia wanting to deter this, because there is a reason. There is a very specific reason why people jokingly claim about peace in the Middle East, because people think that in the Middle East, it's the Middle East against the world. That's not entirely true. Nations in the Middle East are very, very competitive in their oil production, their cultural production. I mean, before we invaded Iraq and Iran were very competitive in their trying to out-military one another. So this pressure coming from their own Middle Eastern countries, it's just mounting and possibly forcing France to take a harder line, especially if they want a sweet cut on that Saudi Arabian oil.
Well, and you can never underestimate the influence of Sunni versus Shia versus Turk versus Kurd. So
this all plays into my opinion that we ought to all just blow each other up and get it over with.
Problem solved. Let's take a little break before we start pushing those buttons, literally, and we'll come back in a little bit and have some fun with the lightning round.
Check out everything in my sky.
There's no winning.
Yeah, there's no way. That's what I'm talking about. Hey, so welcome back to the Devil's Advocate on KTXT, the Raider 881. So, guess what? Hey, do you guys hear that sound? What time is it? Do you hear that sound?
It's every summer afternoon in Thibodaux, Louisiana.
Yeah, never, ever in West Texas, because it hasn't rained here since 1943.
I really don't like rain, so.
No? Okay, well, so you're in the right place.
I like rain when it drains at a reasonable rate.
Yeah,
I've literally seen tropical storms pass through Thibodaux, and after 2 hours, all the water be gone. And in Lubbock, it rains for 5 minutes, and we have water on the streets for 5 months.
That's fascinating.
You water your lawn, and there's a little puddle, a little lake out in front of your house. It's ridiculous.
Well, it's kind of interesting, because I would have thought Thibodaux is darn near underwater, but for some reason, it can still drain.
Nope, so. Thankfully, we have levees that work.
Okay, very nice. Yeah, as opposed to just north, but good idea, good plan. So should we talk about the elephant in the room?
We should.
Come on, guy, you already made fun of me.
No, stop. Gosh. No. The Time Magazine cover, I think this is kind of fun. Time Magazine has a cover of Chris Christie with the headline, "The Elephant in the Room." And it's so not subtle that even Jon Stewart doesn't like it.
And it's funny because he's fat.
Well, exactly. And so that's the whole point. So I don't know. What do you think? Offensive? Funny?
I think Chris Christie's such a character that he probably embraces it and loves it. Actually, he does, because I've watched him on every news channel and he just says, all right, you know, yeah, I'm fat, you know.
Yeah, I don't know if it's offensive. I think that Christie's is going to have a field day with this. I think he would love it. I think that his supporters would love it, because especially if you know, well, I don't know him personally, but I mean, like, given his past and what I've heard about his personality, I think this plays right into how he wants to appeal to the American people.
Yeah, I think Chris Christie is smart enough to realize that there's nothing about this that's going to affect anything. You know, most people, they rely on policies, even if they're misguided about what policies actually are and what they actually do. The fact that he's a little overweight isn't going to change anyone's opinion.
Well, he just got lap band surgery anyway, so.
And any PR is good PR, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Exactly.
And, you know, if he's, I think it's for sure he's going to run in 2016. And I think that he's going to have a hard time winning the primaries because you have to pick yourself as the most conservative person on the ballot, and if to win primaries, especially the early ones in Iowa. So in order to win those, you have to paint yourself as a high
and you have to eat a lot of corn dogs.
Well, yeah.
Lots of corn dogs.
If I was Time Magazine, I probably would have said, what about the rhino in the room? You get it, you know?
But, I like it.
But instead, they
I think anyway you slice it, he's a big story.
Yeah.
He's going to be holding down the Republicans on
as Donald Trump would say, it's huge.
Exactly, huge. All right, so let's see what's next. We had some other fun stories. We're going to ignore that one because we all decided we didn't like that one. Walmart.
And anytime we
Did you know you can start shopping for Black Friday right now at Walmart? Did you know? Because it's already started. Black Friday.
It's fantastic.
No, they're actually going to start much earlier while the sun is still shining on Thanksgiving. And a lot of people who work at Walmart are furious because they're going to be working on the holiday during the day. So what do you think?
I always think that's just so sad because I love Thanksgiving.
And yet they'll only get paid minimum wage. And you know why they only get minimum wage? Because you won't raise it. Yeah. Thanks a lot, Republicans.
You're welcome. Glad
we
work.
Yeah, we do.
Work for their $7.25 on Thanksgiving.
You know why they get minimum wage? Because they agreed to take that job, and that's what it paid. So.
Okay. So what's the second option? You don't
go to
work.
College, get a degree, go out and do something.
Well, people make mistakes. Or will one mistake haunt a person for the rest of their lives?
You did leave Louisiana to go to school in Texas. So.
I did, and I regret that every single day of my life.
All right, so we're not wild about Black Friday on Wednesday. Last one, I'm gonna shorten the clock because this is just too fun. The 51st state. Everybody thought it would be Puerto Rico. But I don't think it's going to be Puerto Rico. I think it's going to be the eastern plains of Colorado, which border Kansas, because that's where voters in a handful of states voted to secede from liberal Colorado. I think that's hysterical.
It's all that secondhand weed smoke that they're having to deal with.
That's what it is, exactly.
Clouding their judgment.
Five counties, a total population of 29,000 people, who I suspect a lot of Coloradans could just as soon do without. So.
Yeah.
Where's John Brown when you need him?
Exactly. This is interesting. This is a stretch of the state that's very, very rural along the Kansas border, and then I think it's kind of fun, and I suspect it's by mutual decree that folks would let them go. It says a non-binding vote, by the way, so there's nothing that says they're they're going to be allowed to secede, but I don't know.
That's the PC way of saying this was pointless.
Well, exactly, and taxpayers paid for the election, so one of my favorite things, but anyway, I just think that one's kind of fun.
Democracy, yay!
Exactly. Most Coloradans, about 5 million, live on the area called the Front Range, which is much less rural, much more urban, from Denver over to the ski areas, and those folks are increasingly Democrat, and it just annoyed these people who live out in farm country.
Yeah, and it just succession has just been like this buzzword that's been thrown around ever since really Obama took office. You know, people in different states wanting to succeed. I just think the idea of succession is just kind of ridiculous.
I would love to see how many of these voters were white. I would love to see that. It wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah, not in straight.
Not that throwing the secession, not that throwing the secession word around would have anything to do with the current president. So speaking of the president and Obamacare, we're going to have a little more fun as at his expense. We do this only because we can, because whenever there's something funny on anybody, we like to share it. Let's give a listen to a little entertainment from the CMT Awards, Country Music Television.
Ow! Oh! Oh, God.
Brad, what's wrong?
I twerked my back. I twerked it good.
Brad, that's not what twerking means.
Yes, it is. Twerking is a medical term, Carrie.
No. Twerking is... Well, have you ever been to a Luke Bryan concert? Yeah.
I thought those were mini seizures.
No.
Oh. Anyway, I think I need to see a doctor.
Hey, do you have that Obamacare?
Obamacare? What's that? What's that?
Oh, it's great.
It's great?
It's great.
What is it?
I started signing up last Thursday, and I'm almost done. Let's go to the website and get you signed up.
Oh, okay.
Let's see. Can't be too hard, right?
Why is it spinning?
Oh, it does that.
Okay. Why is it smoking?
I don't... Maybe we should restart it.
Obamacare by morning.
Why is this taking so long?
I'm gonna wind up with hemorrhoids if I sit here till dawn. We'll have cataracts and dementia. Oh, this is getting on my last nerve. Obamacare by morning. Over six people served.
Brad Paisley and Carrie Underwood at the Country Music Awards.
I wish I could have seen Tim McGraw's face. You know, he's like, oh my gosh, I'm the minority here, and I'm white.
Worst thing ever. Quick correction for you. Earlier I said that Medicaid expansion would kill 19,000 Texans. Sorry, that number is actually for the nation. It's only 3,000 Texans, and that is according to a study that was done earlier this year by the New England Journal of Medicine.
So I have 12,000 reasons to care even less. Oof, now.
Wow. Exactly. Okay, yeah, only 3,000 deaths. And of course, not the last time Jordan or any of the rest of us will be wrong on this show.
Amen to that.
Appreciate you joining us on The Devil's Advocate. We'll see you next Wednesday at 5 here on KTXT The Raider 88.1.
Rec'em Tech.